It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Fun day on the conspiracy theory trail. Lots of fun. The big lie being exposed for what it was, a big lie, as always is. Look, the big lie is always a big lie. That's why it's the big lie. Small kernel of reality, very small, but mostly lie, massively lie. What we're finding out is the agenda to overturn the 2020 election. Yeah, they were planning January 6th for a while. They were planning, well, much worse. Also, I love the fact that the MyPillow guy won't give up. The MyPillow guy is, I think he's a true believer. I don't think they read him in on the big lie. This is kind of the joke. And this is one of those things. It's like one of those college age jokes where everybody in the room except the one guy knows what's going on. And the whole thing is to make him look like a dupe. I think the MyPillow guy's the dupe in all this, because he's still out there, even today, as we know that they didn't buy any of the Dominion voting system fraud allegations. They didn't buy any of that stuff. They knew there was no voter fraud going on. They knew none of the things that they were screaming outwardly was actually true, but they didn't tell Rudy and the MyPillow guy, which is kind of a great goof if you think about it, because even he's running around saying that Alabama, evidently, according to the MyPillow guy, flipped 100,000 votes from Donald Trump to Joe Biden. You go, why? Why Alabama? There was no way, at least I didn't believe there was any way Joe Biden was going to carry Alabama. So am I missing something? Did I miss this? And in fact, the Alabama Secretary of State, you know, had to come out. And this is where now it's reached this level of, if you're the Alabama Secretary of State, do you even bother? Because the MyPillow guy is such a caricature of an actual person at this point. Do you just go, you know what? Consider the source. It's the MyPillow guy. He's probably still sleeping. But there he is, you know, still carrying the water, still doing the Trump's work. And again, I don't think anyone's read him in on the fact that it was all a lie. And maybe just a goof to get him to go even further. Now even more funny is Michael Flynn, who, you know, basically threw his entire career away for Donald Trump. Some interesting video coming out from Mike Flynn. The former national security advisor, disgraced, fired, what, twice? By both administrations. By both Obama and Donald Trump, if you needed that clarified. He lied to Mike Pence, so he had to go. At least that's what it was. He's now one of the top QAnon kook way out there conspiracy nuts. He's out there saying, someone asked him something about salad dressing. And it's his belief. He said, somebody sent me a thing this morning where they're talking about putting the vaccine in salad dressing. I'm going, okay. Yeah, I know there are people out there who are working on, you know, figuring out how to get the vaccine into other areas, edibles, because they had them in the past. In fact, you talk to people older than me, like my parents' generation's age, when the polio vaccine came out, they gave them, oral versions of them so they wouldn't have to jab them. That's probably coming. But salad dressing? Really? Exactly how many people are eating the salad dressing? This is how it goes in this weird world where he goes, yeah, I saw something about it. They're going to put it in salad dressing. And, there are people out there who are seriously thinking about how to impose their will on our society, and it has to stop. So he plays this game. I heard somebody sent me something that I heard, and now it's God's honest fact. Now it's something that has to be stopped because somebody said something that may be true or may not be true, but we're going to take it as long as it fits our narrative as part of the grand conspiracy. Now, I guess in Mike Flynn's mind, you know, Hidden Valley Ranch and Newman's Own and Wishbone and the rest of them are conspiring against the Donald and the pillow. And these conspiracies just get crazier and crazier. I mean, it's nuts. It really is. And, you know, when you stop and you think about it, especially on the vaccine front, the weird thing is when you ask most of these anti-vax folks, did you know that all 50 states in this country, all of them, require children to be vaccinated from polio, mumps, measles, rubella, all of them. There's a ton of them. My wife's got the card. You need an actual card to say, here it is. We've got a vaccine passport to get our kids into school. But now there's a conspiracy to get them to take away my freedoms. Didn't say anything about the kids getting the vaccine because we go, hey, you know, we don't want the kids getting mumps, measles, rubella, polio. You know, we figured out how to stop that. We figured out how to help our children. When did we get so dumb? I'm kind of thinking it's been a while. Because today I'm going to have a guest on a little bit later that the last time I had him on the program was years ago. And we were talking about Jade Helm 15. And as soon as I was doing some research back into his book and thinking about what I'm going to talk about with him, I hearkened back to, oh my God, Jade Helm 15. How could I have forgotten the conspiracy by Obama to take over the entire Southwest of the U.S. with the military? There was going to be a military coup during the Obama years. Do you remember? Do you remember how they were going to, you know, they were going to quarter soldiers in people's homes in the Southwest and they were going to take over and it was going to be great. And in fact, you know, Republicans were losing their ever-loving freaking minds. There was one poll done in May that of 2015 that found something like 32% of Republicans believed that Obama was going to try and take over the country, even though he's the freaking president. You go, holy gosh. He's going to take over the military. Yes, he's the commander-in-chief, you halfwits. But it was the grand conspiracy, and it was tied with, and this was the part I forgot. It was tied with, there was going to be an asteroid or a meteor that was going to crash into the U.S. as part of it. So I'm going, you know, the beginnings of the Q kookery over there with the asteroids. Yes, yes, a little craziness over there. They were finding themselves, and, you know, now they've blossomed into much crazier conspiracies because the last guy made it cool to be crazy. You know, made it kind of the in thing to be the kookanut. And, you know, I look back to all of these conspiracies and there are tons of them. The right wing is flush with conspiracies. Now there's some on the left, but nowhere near as well thought out and as colorful as the ones you have on the extreme right. My favorite ones are, you know, I have a friend who talks about the chemtrails all the time. That's all he talks about, chemtrails. You know, they're poisoning us. They're doing all this stuff. See, there's line in the sky. So line in the sky equals the government is dropping poison on us to make us sterile. And I'm going, but I got three kids. They're there. The 19 and counting people still having kids. Yeah. Don't worry about facts. It's all about the anger. You know, Obama was, you remember when Obama was going to declare martial law? And then they were, during the Trump years, you know, basically begging for martial law. Remember that? This was the conservatives. This was the right-wing kookery, you know, going to, you know, new world order, one government. They're going to come in and they're going to take our rights and they're going to grab our guns. They're going to door to door. Yeah, like our government has that kind of ambition. They're going to come door to door and steal all of our guns. They can't even get people to get a vaccine that is going to save their lives. And you think that they're going to come knocking on people's door to take their guns away. We can't even get the census right half the time. And yet, oh, they're coming for the guns. And then they're going to take our guns, and this is the part of the conspiracy, and it's great. Love it. And they're going to put us all into FEMA concentration camps. All because the Senate passed a law back in 2009, the Serve America Act, which created, I guess, Job Corps, and there were some other things, or AmeriCorps, I believe it was. And all of that was going to force us into these, this forced conscription, and we were going to all have to serve the government masters. It was this, you know, and again, a lot of this came out of right-wing talk radio. And you have to give them credit. You know, they did use every opportunity where you saw people in the military back during the Obama years as an opportunity to say, see, Obama's bringing the military. You know, there was the one picture I remember, the National Guard was, getting onto an Amtrak train. See, they're shipping them out. They're dispersing them throughout the country. And my other favorites, there have been so many, especially during the Obama years, because the right-wing crazies were way out there. We were going to have foreign soldiers on our ground, which is why the Oath Keepers and these right-wing militia groups, they were doing their, we've got to have our exercises because we got to fight these foreign soldiers. And you go, when did that happen? When did we get a foreign occupying army on our soil? Oh, yeah, that would have been January 6th. That would have been every one of those show of force rallies that they did, like in Virginia. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the people who are screaming, they're going to put foreign troops on our soil, who are the ones who are attempting to overthrow our military. Just kind of a thought. Yeah, so fun times. But in my lifetime, it's been nothing but conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory. You go back to, when Timothy Veigh and Terry Nichols blew up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. And I think for a lot of people, it was the first time that they realized in this country that there is an undercurrent of crazy. That you've got these militia groups who have an alternative view of reality or have an alternative view of what this country should be. And they had their president for 4 years. They had someone who would not speak to them in a way that say, sit down and stop, because they like him. They're his peeps. And you go right through 9/11. I mean, all of these conspiracies are right there out in front. And, the idea that, we're gonna take Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. are going to make one country. It's going to be the North American Union. And we're going to have one country and one government. And then we're going to take... Now, look, there are things that go on that make you go, hey, we've got to push back. But some of this stuff is really out on the fringe. And this is what's frightening to me, because these conspiracies are getting more and more mainstream. And our media, I don't believe, takes them seriously. I mean, I'll tell you, my reality is I find it hysterical that there are people who buy this stuff. I mean, the vaccine thing to me is on a certain level kind of hysterical. That, yes, we have something that can protect you and your family. We have something that is going to keep your family safe. But no, you're not going to take it. Because, I don't know. Because someone told you that, I read an article. Or some quack selling beet juice is trying to convince you, no, I've got the cure. It kind of made me think today. Think about the cavemen. Imagine if you in the middle of winter, if you go to the caveman, you go, I've discovered fire. I'm giving you fire. I'm giving you a way to not freeze to death. And they go, no, I don't want fire. Ooh, fire bad. And then they die. And you go, okay. I mean, this is where I've come at this point. Into this bizarre space of I guess it's just because I meet so many crazy people in a day that it's sad. And I'm really struggling with not just exploding. But it's so sad. And I'm like, just when did we become such lunatics? When is a society, because we're supposedly smart, we've supposedly evolved, and yet there's so much, to steal a Ronald Reagan line, there's so much that our friends on the far right think that isn't so. Now, I've had people throw back, oh, you trust the government. I trust the government is about as far as I can throw it, which is not at all. But I also don't trust corporate special interests even worse. I want no part of corporate America. And somehow you've got to figure out, how are we going to get through all this? If I don't trust government and I don't trust corporate America, who do I trust? Well, I trust people that I know well, people that I do trust. My doctor, experts that I give some bit of credibility to. And they're all telling me the same thing. This vaccine, like for the caveman, is fire. This is what's going to save us. And yet we still have folks who are, no, don't want to. Gonna throw, kick, scream, tantrum. Wine, didn't get my cereal in the cereal aisle. And all under the guise of these bizarre conspiracy theories. And look, all conspiracy theories have a shred of something that you go, oh, that's true. So if that little grain is true, then everything else has to be true, which is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. But yeah, Jade Helm 15 stuck in my head today. And I remember just how crazy we were in that moment. And it took me back to a fun time, because I actually remember that laughing at that point. And then I started thinking about, well, what if Donald Trump would have decided, you know what, we're gonna have a joint military operation throughout New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, and L.A. Would you go, he's trying to take over the inner cities? I personally would think he's trying to stir up trouble. But we also aren't at war with L.A., Chicago, New York, or, well, maybe we were. But yeah, lots of fun and craziness. I'd love to hear yours. What's your favorite conspiracy theory? Which one really makes you go, yeah, that's funny? And what kernel of truth makes you go, see, this could be? Because we haven't found the chip in the vaccine. And I think by now, some of the really smart people would have found the chip and figured out how to either program it differently or expose it. But no chips. And I was kind of hoping there'd be chips. Just a thought. I'd love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
There's nothing more American than workers standing up. And the union gives a voice to win. On The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1910. That was the day the Protocol of Peace brought an end to the cloakmaker strike in New York City. The garment industry had been rocked by the uprising of 20,000 months earlier. Young women had struck hundreds of small shops over pay, recognition, and working conditions. They won ILGWU recognition in all but a handful of shops. 60,000 cloakmakers in the city were inspired to walk out of the sweatshops that July. The mostly male strike force demanded shorter hours and increased pay, the closed shop, and more. Union membership soared, and most of the small shops caved. The larger manufacturers would not, however, and by the end of the summer, the Protocol of Peace was negotiated. Future Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis figured prominently in the negotiations. The protocol established higher wages, shorter hours, and overtime pay. It also guaranteed the union shop, elimination of contracting, and monitoring of piecework rates. Even more significant, workers won a union health center, a board of sanitary control, a board of grievances, and a board of arbitration. For the first time, garment workers had access to health care, a way to eliminate sweatshop conditions, and a way to mediate and resolve shop floor complaints. The price to be paid, however, was that workers would give up their most powerful leveraging tool, the right to strike. The agreement was lauded as a step forward for industrial democracy. But soon, many workers complained that the protocol failed to answer a number of shop floor issues. Grievances piled up, and workers were penalized when they attempted to strike to resolve their problems. The protocol would be scrapped for a return to militant strikes during the 1920s. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Here at The Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So like I said, you know, these conspiracy theories really, you know, they kind of, at a certain level, they kind of make me laugh because they're creative. Look, if your mind can expand to thinking that our military having joint operations in the desert to simulate activities in places like Iraq and Afghanistan is akin to taking over the country. And you actually had, you know, Texas Governor Greg Abbott at the time, you know, calling up the National Guard like they're going to fight the U.S. military. It was crazy, crazy times. But you know, look, fun in the country. But again, back to the big lie, being the big lie. I'm here to share some thoughts on the latest of the big lies. I've asked our good friend Joe Walsh to come back and share some thoughts. Joe's a former Illinois congressman, Tea Party guy, Freedom Caucus guy, all of that stuff, former presidential candidate. He is the host of the F Silence podcast. You can find that at fsilencepodcast.com. Joe, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, my brother, how the heck are you?
I am fantastic. I'm looking at yesterday's big news story that got almost no attention, in my view, of the two-page memo that said, you know what, yeah we were gonna do a little coup, little winter coup. Nothing wrong with that, Joe.
Most of America, Rick, I think damn near all of us, have no idea how close we came to an actual coup earlier this year. I agree, Rick, with exactly what you just said. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, should have been the biggest story of the day again yesterday. In writing, there it is, just reinforcing what we all know. I say this every day, Rick. I try to tweet it once a week. A sitting American president tried to overturn an American election. Don't ever forget that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible. And it's right there in writing. And the thing, you know, here's the thing that gets me. As I was sitting reading it, and now for you and for me, and I think for most people who were paying attention during that period, none of this stuff was new. They trial ballooned all of this. But to see it all in writing in one place in a very methodical way of this is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to break precedent. This is how we're going to get so the next person to do this. And ultimately, we're going to win. It was chilling. I'll be honest. I sat here and I go, this should have worked.
Hey, Rick, I served with Mike Pence in Congress. At the time, I really liked Mike Pence. I've obviously lost a lot of respect for him, but for him, I mean, I read that memo and some of what we've read, some of the excerpts from Woodward's and Costa's book, and when you realize how close Mike Pence came to doing some of this, and the fact that Mike Pence acknowledges that he struggled with this. Struggled?
Yeah,
but imagine, I mean, anybody else, any other vice president, you know, could have, might have gone along with this.
And the fact that he went to Vice President Potato, I mean, I didn't know Dan Quayle was still around. And yet, you know,
my friend,
history is going to remember Dan Quayle, not for the potato thing, because right now I'm thinking Dan Quayle, you know, best vice president ever.
But to me, the biggest takeaway is, Rick, that Mike Pence actually struggled with what he should do. And, you know, Donald Trump said, do this or I'll never be your friend again. Well, that's Trump. And we know who Trump is. He's a traitor. He's a horrible human being. But how could anybody struggle with what you had to do? There was no struggle. And thank God Mike Pence did the right thing at the end of the day. But again, Rick, we came a lot closer than anybody knows.
No, I mean, and that's, again, that's the scary thing. And it goes back to our history because, again, I was reading through this 6-point memo, and a lot of it, you know, goes back to history, you know, Adams, Jefferson. So they've made a historical connection with, you know, with the founding fathers and how this could play out and how they were going to, you know, heap it in. You know, this is how the founding fathers wanted it because this is how it's happened before. And you go, no, this isn't how it happened before. Good try to rewrite history, though.
But here's the point for us. Here's the scary, freaking point for us. The guy who did try to overturn the election, the guy who did push a coup, is the leader of one of America's two major political parties. He's the most popular Republican. He's the undisputed leader of the party. And if he wants to be the nominee in 2024, he will not be challenged. And no Republican, I mean, God bless Kinzinger and Cheney, but Republicans refuse to call any of this out.
I mean, and that's the thing that gets me. I mean, this is right before our eyes. This is the smoking gun. And like I said, none of this stuff was new. I remember talking about, you know, back in November, how the House of Representatives would vote, had 26 votes, and that's where they wanted to get to, and how they were going to break the election the Electoral Count Act, and how they were. This was not new, but for me, and I know I said this before, but to see this in writing, in such clarity, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, again, nothing new here for me. But to see it in writing from a White House lawyer that you know Trump had eyes on and approved, that's what just sent chills down my spine.
That's so interesting, Rick. You and I reacted very differently to this memo because it didn't send chills down my spine because I've had the chills down my spine for the last almost 7 or 8 months. I first had chills down my spine last summer, 5 months before the election, when Trump began to talk about how the election was going to be rigged, when a president began to lie about the election before the election.
Yeah.
I had chills down my spine when Trump incited an insurrection, and then the damn insurrection happened. So you talk about a smoking gun, I agree. But the smoking gun all along has been Trump, who has lied about this election, and he continues to do it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where, you know, you go, for you, it was him, you know, talking about the election going to be stolen in 2020. I was talking about in 2015 that he was already laying this groundwork. This was always the game plan. So they just, you know, they just followed through on it. And, you know, when I look at this stuff, this, I guess I have to put this in a question. Because I look at this stuff and I go, you know what? They knew that all of the voter fraud claims, all of the election irregularity claims, you know, all of that stuff. They knew that was all BS. That was all the big lie, except for maybe the MyPillow guy and Rudy Giuliani, who they're probably just didn't read in on and they were just goofing on. They knew all that was BS. They wanted to get to here where they could just completely overturn the election and win that way.
And the guys I know, the Mark Meadows and the Jim Jordans of the world, they know that they've known all along this is BS. And they've all gone along with Trump. And really, guys like Meadows and Jordan, they've egged him on. Knowing this is bullshit, they've egged him on to continue out there to push the big lie. But Rick, I get less angry at you know, Green and Gates and Meadows and Jordan. I get angrier at all the other Republicans who just don't even open their mouths and they just don't say a thing.
Yeah.
They know better.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I expect the extreme crowd. I expect the Scott Perry in my neck of the woods to go along with whatever, you know, whatever. But it's you know, the rest of them you would think had something of a conscience. But again, you know, here's where you and I are going to differ. I have said the Republican Party has been off the rails for a very long time, and you know, take this how you have to. It was 2010 that things went really off the rails. I'll go back to 94 when it went, you know, off the rails. It seems like the party's been going further to the extreme right for a very long time. And you can counter. You can do that. And then the left has gone further to the left. And I agree. We're in dangerous waters.
And, I would, and having been part of what that movement that you would say went off the rails, I mean, I got elected in 2010. Even if I agreed with you, and I do some, Rick, off the rails, more extreme, but based on issues. I mean, maybe we were extreme on some of the social issues. Maybe we were extreme on shutting down the government or the debt or stopping Obamacare. Fine, but issues-based and always pushing issues. And maybe, again, we were extreme. The party now, Rick, is anti-democracy. The party now attacks our very democracy. We're not talking about, you know, arguing about the debt or Obamacare. They're talking about overturning the election. This is a wholly different place.
And the weird thing is, and maybe you still get people who think that Obama or Trump's coming back, that he's going to be reinstalled at some point very soon. I actually know people who think it's any day. You mark my words, he's coming back any day now. And I'm going, the election's over.
Rick, I hear it every day. Because I still engage with hundreds of GOP-based voters every day, yeah, I hear that stuff every day.
Just crazy. And, you know, I keep coming back to these conspiracy theories, you know, on everything top to bottom, from vaccines to, you know, I just remember Jade Helm 15, which was a blast from the past. And I'm going, you know, we've been heading down this, you know, we've always had fringe characters who've had fringe ideas, and they were always tolerable because their numbers were negligible and people just kind of, yeah, go ahead. Now they're in the mainstream, it seems, of the Republican Party, and we've got a media structure that keeps feeding that fire.
Rick, we've always had radical elements on both sides.
Yeah.
But now you are correct. The entire base of one of our two major political parties is now fully radicalized. I mean fully radicalized in that, as you've said eloquently, they're living in la la land, in a land of conspiracies and untruths. And I hear it every day. And they don't believe January 6th was any big deal. I mean, and they don't trust the vaccines. You and I can go on and on and on. But that is the entire base. And they don't believe Joe Biden won. The entire base of the party, that's where they are now.
Is any help for them, or is this, you know, the rest of the country is going to have to figure out how to maneuver around them?
So some of them can be saved, and I'm able to move some of them every week, but the vast majority, no. The Republican Party, as you and I have said before, Rick, it's a party of old white men and old white women, and they're not being replaced, and old white men and old white women eventually die. And most of those folks, you are not going to save.
Yeah, but you know, the loudest ones I see are young people who are figuring out, who I call the grifters. They've figured out how to make a substantial living off of pushing these conspiracies, selling their snake oil and beet juice and all that stuff. So I don't see that going away anytime soon. So I don't know that the Republican Party is going to change anytime in my lifetime. And it's going to lead for an interesting next year, because I don't think we're going to get an infrastructure bill. And if we do, it's only going to be the bipartisan one. And I think Democrats are going to lose the House and the Senate.
Well, two things. I believe, and I've said it now publicly for a couple of years, we don't get it yet, but we're watching the death of one of our two major political parties. I believe the Republican Party is dying. I believe it's going to become a rural red state regional party. I think that's enough for them to take control of the House next year. I think you're right. I think they probably will, especially, Rick, if the Democrats step all over themselves and don't at least come together and approve the basic infrastructure package. If they can't do that, if the Democrats, you know, blot all over themselves and blow infrastructure, then they're going to lose the House.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Let me ask you this. You know, given the situation we're in right now, where you've got Manchin and Sinema, who are saying, no, we don't get the one we want. We're not going to give you anything over there, and kind of boogering all this up. And you got the progressives in the House going, well, if we're not going to get the $3.5 trillion, we're not going to give you the other one. Do you see Republicans in the House coming around and going, you know what, we're gonna vote for the bipartisan bill, just to send a, if for no other reason, just to send a wedge in the Democratic Party? Do you see that possible?
No, I don't. And based on some conversations I'm having privately, I think Republicans generally are going to still hold firm against even the bipartisan package and just put it all on Dems. And again, Rick, I don't know exactly where you stand on this, but, and I've been in these turf wars before. My God, you have an opportunity to at least pass a basic roads, bridges, and broadband package. Do it.
Yep. No, I've said from the start, I want both. You're not going to get $3.5 trillion. Manchin's already said no. If he's going to give me a trillion, we take it. We get it put into place. We get that program moving. May not be as much funding as we need, want, whatever, but we get it moving and we expand from there. But you got to take something back home. There's got to be, bacon's got to get back onto the plates at home.
Absolutely. And I'm not a Democrat. If I were advising Democrats, take that. I mean, my God, it's been, when's the last time we passed an infrastructure package? Take that. And the American people generally agree with Biden on what he's doing with COVID. That would be then a pretty decent record to run on in 2022.
Yeah, no, you got to have something, and it's got to be the jobs that are going to be created. And look, for me, this bill should have been already passed months ago so that we were starting to get some of this investment out here in the fall so that come springtime, people are really, we got the economy smoking. And you're heading in the right direction, because people generally vote on how they feel at that moment. Yes. Economically, if you're doing well, you're going to stay with the horse that got you there.
I have all the respect in the world, Rick. I really do, for Nancy Pelosi. I think she's tough and brilliant. I don't know why she's let this drag on so long. Pass that damn bipartisan package.
Yeah, for me, it's that simple. Last question I've got for you, because on the vaccine front, you know, my right-wing friends are losing their ever-loving flipping minds over the mandate that, and I've been saying, look, capitalism will decide. Corporate America, since government can't figure this out, you know, the private sector is going to have to. You know, private employers saying you have to be vaccinated, you can't get on a plane, you do all those things. You agree or disagree?
Private employers have the right to do whatever they want to do. You know, you can't come into my establishment unless you're vaccinated. You can't work here unless you're vaccinated. Yep. I've got no problems with any of that. I get a little shakier when the government comes in and says, you've got to get vaccinated, or especially says to businesses, you have to. I'd rather that come from the private sector.
Yeah, I say we have to use the Department of Labor to keep workers safe. Me as a worker, when I go into the workplace, I want to make sure I'm safe. But Joe, I appreciate the time. As always, great talking with you, my friend.
Keep slugging, Rick. Thank you, man.
Nice stuff. God, appreciate it. Joe Walsh, former Illinois congressman. Make sure you check out his podcast, fsilencepodcast.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1985. That was the year that the first Farm Aid concert was held in Champaign, Illinois. A retrospective article in Time magazine reported, quote, in the 1980s, American farmers were hit hard by what were, at the time, the worst economic conditions since the Great Depression. Droughts ravaged the fields, property values plunged, loan interest rates soared, thousands were forced off their land and faced foreclosure and bankruptcy. Farmer suicide rose at alarming rates. The idea to use music to aid the farmers began with Bob Dylan at an event to help African famine victims. Then musicians Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, and Neil Young took up his idea and ran with it.
50 musicians took the stage at the University of Illinois football stadium. The organizers were joined by such headliners as Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, Billy Joel, Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, Bonnie Raitt, Kenny Rogers, Joni Mitchell, The Beach Boys, Jimmy Buffett, Bon Jovi, Foreigner, and more. The musicians played for 14 hours to a rain-soaked crowd of nearly 80,000. A telethon also helped to bring in donations. It raised $9 million for farm relief. More importantly, it helped raise national awareness of the dire economic conditions faced by many small farmers. Farm Aid has continued to hold concerts for small farmers. In 2015, the 30th anniversary concert was held in Chicago. As an organization, Farm Aid has raised more than $50 million for small farmers.
Now, live for Farm Aid at a concert for America, here's Willie Nelson.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show.
I just can't wait to get on school.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
As I said at the start, it was 6 years ago. Hard to believe it's been that long. And it's not going to happen that again, that we're not going to wait 6 years to get my next guest back on. But it was 6 years ago that I talked with Jason Stanford about Jade Helm 15. And again, when I went back and I looked at my notes, I'm like, I forgot all about that bit of crazy. And I, in fact, you know, I had to remember it and bring it up. But, you know, it's just gotten worse and worse as we forget what happened, you know, just a couple of years ago. So it's easy to forget history, kind of easy to rewrite it as well, which is why I've asked Jason Stanford to come back and talk with us. Jason's an author. He's also the chief officer of communications and community engagement for one of our country's largest school districts in Texas. He's got a book out, Forget the Alamo. One of those things where maybe everything we knew about the Alamo, not actually accurate, but here to share some thoughts on, well, that and Jade Helm 15. I've got Jason Stanford here. Jason, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So I couldn't help but be just struck by the fact that I'm talking to you today about conspiracy and rewriting history and all kind of craziness. And the last time we spoke was over, you know, Obama's going to take over the country with the military, even though he was commander in chief, and it was going to be the end of America. And there was, and look where we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. Back then, Jade Helm was this wild conspiracy theory about how this secret conspiracy was going to take over our country, which was pretty much how January 6th played out. You know, a wild conspiracy come to life. Back then, it was a hypothetical. Now they're just LARPing it. And the only difference is the day of the week. You know, back then it was crazy. This right now it's Tuesday.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's nuts. And, you know, but here's the thing. I go back to that Jade Helm thing and I remember, you know, it got crazy and then it got even crazier. Kind of like today, we've got your mainstream kookery and then you've got the Q kookery who have gone it even further. They tied Jade Helm 15 to an asteroid or a meteor coming to destroy the planet. And it was all kinds of nuts that went on even further than the Obama's taking over the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hate to bring it back to Texas, but being a Texan, I just have to. When the abortion bill passed and I saw all those reporters out there say, well, it looks like all the alarmists were right. I'm like, yeah, we've been telling you all along. When Jade Helm happens, we said, this is crazy talk and it's dangerous. And all you guys said, oh, it's just crazy talk. I mean, not you, but the mainstream journalists were like, oh, this is just crazy. We don't have to take it seriously. In Texas, the crazy talk is legislated into law. And now it's become national law. Now it's become the National Republican Party. And now the crazy has taken over. It used to be the mainstream Republicans could keep them in a closet and get their votes, but not let them near the sharp knives. And it's just not that way anymore. Now they're all terrified of these people. Kevin McCarthy looks like the biggest coward in the world because he can't say no when they say the sky is, you know, magenta and it's blue.
Yeah. No, in fact, I just had a conversation with Joe Walsh, former Tea Party congressman, and he's like, look, you know, the Republicans, outside of the Gates and the Marjorie Trader Greens and the Lauren Gunnut Boberts and them, outside of those fringe elements, the Republican Party's full of a bunch of cowards who won't stand up because they know the truth. They knew what was in that memo yesterday before any of us got to see it. They knew what was happening. They know there was no voter fraud. There was no ballot stuffing. There was none of the things that the MyPillow guy and Rudy Giuliani were spewing, yet they still encourage it and they're still pushing it.
Yeah, they have turned the truth into something that is politically toxic in their party. And, you know, being a Republican, being in Texas, I've got a lot of friends who are Republican in politics. And, you know, they freely admit privately that they just have to check the Trump box. They have to do it. Otherwise, the primary voters will turn on them.
It's true.
And if they don't do it convincingly enough, like George P. Bush hasn't done here in Texas, they're never going to win again. And the only way you can win a Republican primary now is to prove you are loyal to Trump.
Yeah.
It has survived his presidency.
No,
I think that is what is going to make wins in 2022 possible, even here in Texas.
Yeah, and I think the perfect example of what you're talking about is happening in Ohio with Representative Gonzalez, who was an Ohio State football hero, beat Michigan single-handedly. I mean, he's on the legend of he was on the level of gods until he came out against Trump. And now they're ousting him from the party. So, you know, it's not just Texas. It's places like Ohio as well. I do want to get to the book, though. Forget the Alamo. Why should we forget the Alamo?
Well, it's kind of like what with Trumpism today. Telling the truth has become politically disloyal in Texas. And it's funny. I keep trying to explain to people, we know George Washington owned slaves. We're comfortable with that. We can hold these two truths in our head at the same time, that they enslaved people, but also created the greatest democracy in world history. We can hold these two things in our head at the same time, but Texans can't. It's like we never got rid of our lost cause history. The South had their lost cause history, and that's largely been debunked. Robert E. Lee got taken down in Richmond, Virginia, but we freak out when we even suggest that the Texas Revolution was fought over slavery. That is the most controversial, disloyal idea that we can come up with. And it's settled law among historians, but it's politically incorrect. And that's why when we had a book event, I have two other co-authors, so I say we had a book event at the State History Museum, the Lieutenant Governor canceled it on us because he did not want the State History Museum to sanction our book by hosting a discussion of it. We were banned by the State History Museum for deigning to want to talk about state history.
but again, this is that mindset, because we can't talk about history unless it's the approved Texas history.
And
look, Texas has an overweighted power in this entire country, because most of what's written in textbooks comes out of freaking Texas, where we can take we take Benjamin Franklin out of history, but we put Phyllis Schlafly in.
Yeah. It was Thomas Jefferson we took out, but I get you. So with the Alamo, it was really weird. So the fight on the State Board of Education wasn't whether or not it was fought over slavery or not. It was whether we were going to include Tejanos as heroes of the Texas Revolution alongside Davy Crockett and Jim Bowie and William Barrett Travis. And so the compromise was they wrote into state law that all seventh graders in Texas, when they took Texas state history, had to be taught that all of the people who died at the Alamo were heroic. Nowhere else in Texas state curriculum are we required to teach children that anyone was heroic. Not Neil Armstrong, not Sam Houston, who actually won the dang war, not anyone who liberated Europe from fascism, just those 200 or so dudes who died at the Alamo in a place they never should have been in the first place.
What about the people on the other side? Are they heroic too?
Oh, no, they're still bad. They're evil.
Oh, okay. Because we did that with the Civil War, that, you know, I did a tour here in Gettysburg, where, you know, the guy who was giving the tour was like, you know, even the Confederates, you know, and this and all that, they were all heroes. I'm going, no, one side was traitors.
Yeah.
That's reality. There's no reality. There's no world where both sides can be heroes. One side's the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's so interesting how we've evolved so far beyond this lost cause history of the South. It used to be valorous. It used to be over states' rights. I even had one Civil War reenactor swear to me that the Civil War was fought over the hat tax in South Carolina. But broadly speaking, that's considered a ridiculous idea. In Texas, it's state law.
Wow.
They created, as a response to the 1619 project, the Texas legislature passed the 1836 project, which is when the Texas Revolution was won. And that meant the state legislature created a board of historians to advise the governor on a, quote, patriotic version of Texas history. And what they're going to do is print up brochures extolling the business-friendly virtues and values found in Texas history and give it out to people at the DMV when they get their driver's license. So not only are we politically correct here, we're also extraordinarily dumb and wasteful.
And propagandizing. And, yep. And look, there are some who go, but Jason, we should have a shared history. We should have one that's it's a positive history. We should have one that, that aspires us to be better. You know, we don't want to look at all the ugly, dirty, nasty blood and guts kind of stuff. We want happy stuff. There's enough hate in the world, Jason.
I completely agree with you that there's enough hate in the world. But the way this history has been taught for so long is that it has turned Mexican Americans in Texas into second class citizens in a state that used to be their country. Over and over again, talking to Hispanics in Texas, we were told that they would walk in with their white friends in seventh grade into the Alamo on a field trip, you know, walk in as Texans and come out as Mexicans and Americans. And I have a friend, he grew up in the 60s and 70s in San Antonio, and after school they would play Alamo, right? And all the white kids would be on one side and all the brown kids would be on the other, except when they played it, the white kids won. This is told as a story of white supremacy to the point where most Hispanics in Texas, according to a recent poll, don't know who won the Battle of the Alamo.
Wow.
When the Mexicans did. Yeah, this is told as a story of good and evil, and it's perverted to the extent where Mexican Americans in Texas internalize that they are the bad guy. And that does two things. One, it either really makes them mad, or two, it makes them disassociate with their own state's history. And they just consider the creation myth of Texas as white people's history. Like, there's so many people in San Antonio, a dominantly Hispanic city, who never go to the Alamo, and it's in the busiest part of town. It's right in the center of town. And it's just, that's other people's business.
Interesting. And look, and we're in this moment right now of fighting over history. And you know, I have people who say, well, we need to teach critical race theory. We don't, absolutely not. We need this project, that project, the other project. I just want truth. I just want my kids to be presented with what actually happened and give them the tools to critically examine, think about, and come to some conclusions on all sides, good, bad, and different. Isn't that what education should be about?
Well, that's what societies are supposed to be about. We're supposed to evolve in our understanding of ourselves. And we get smarter as we go on. A couple hundred years ago, long division was taught at Yale. We get smarter as we go on as a people, not just individually, but because we learn from each other. And if we have politicians enforcing a primitive and false understanding of our own history, we don't evolve. That's what happened in the Soviet Union, where that now they're just willing to believe anything. When I lived there in 92, 93, Russians had paintings of UFOs on the wall. They believed anything in Russia because they'd been lied to for so long. This kind of thing trains a people, an entire society, to be lied to. And that's, well, that explains Texas about as well as anything.
No, that's great. I mean, but it puts us in the place that we're in now, because I'm sitting here in this moment going, you know, I don't know how we've become this polarized country over something, over a vaccine, where you go, this could save your life. Where, you know, 20 years ago, I don't know that it would have been this big of a divisive issue. It's everyone has their own, and thank you, Trump administration, alternative reality. They've got their own alternative facts. We've now got alternative histories. I mean, was it Glenn Beck who wrote the book about the founding fathers, where he got an opinion from George Washington's horse? I mean, it's become so ludicrous that you go, what do you believe? And look, they're great at flooding the zone so that nothing is believable and everything is believable.
Well, you know, it depends, frankly, Rick, on which end of the horse he got his opinion from. But I don't know if divisive and divided is the right way to understand what we're going through now. Like, on one side, we've got people who believe in science and the spherical shape of the planet, and that up is up and down is down, and that climate change is real. And we're all just trying to adjust to this crazy world. It's not that there are two different opinions. It's that there's one truth. And then there's the crazy drunk uncles who you don't want to sit next to at Thanksgiving are slowly taking over the world because the guardrails have fallen. you know, objective journalism has allowed them in to tell it, to teach us all that, oh, there are two sides and we're divided. We're not.
No, you're spot
on. Democrats and most of us, even in Texas, are united around the truth. But these guys have amassed enough power to, if they can't control us, they can at least stop progress as they are in Washington. Here in Texas, we got that horrible anti-abortion bill where people can, you know, file a lawsuit if the Uber driver gave someone a ride to Planned Parenthood on the off chance that maybe it was before 6 weeks or after 6 weeks. 80% of this state is against that. Even 4 in 10 Republicans. Like, there is enough of a reality-based constituency here to sell it. But we've allowed them so far into power that now a small portion of the state in Texas can control the state through Republican primaries. And because of the way the Supreme Court is set up, and because of the way, you know, because we don't give every American a vote in the Senate, because we give, you know, some, because we have an agrarian political system in a modern world, a few crazy people can control the country.
And this is where we are. No, you're spot on. So back to the book, because I find it fascinating that we're going to chuck everything we know about the Alamo. Where can we get Forget the Alamo first? Let's start there.
Everywhere good books are sold. I like bookshop.org. It's the Amazon for independent bookstores. And you can request from an independent bookstore. You can just get it, you know, you can request a specific one, or they'll just give it to you from one of them. Obviously, Amazon has it. The book was so popular after we were banned from the State History Museum that it sold out on Amazon twice in 1 week, but they're plenty stocked up now.
Good, good. I was going to say, now you can retire, right? Did you send the thank you to the Lieutenant Governor?
We are grateful for the publicity, but there is nothing less successful than a successful writer.
See, I would send him a signed copy with a thank you note.
I don't know if he could read.
But that's just me. Maybe I'd send him an audio book then, just because maybe he needs to hear it. So real quick, you know, what made you write this? Why did you think this was an important moment?
It started out just as a myth-busting exercise. One of us was writing a column. Chris Tomlinson was writing a column about how it was a stupid idea to spend $500 million to fix up the Alamo. They're going to redevelop it, get the tourist traps out of there, build a proper history museum. And he said, it's really stupid to do that when it's based on a white supremacist myth. And Brian and I had never heard any of this before. It was a huge shock. And we figured if there's this massively well-known famous myth out there that no one knows the real truth about, that would probably be a good book. And the publisher agreed. But as we got into it, we realized how race-based this myth was and how punishing it was for what will soon be Texas's majority population in a state that used to be Mexico, and how closely tied it was to everything else. The pattern of the Alamo, and that enforcing the political narrative was started on day one. The day after the Alamo fell, they started telling a cover story about how they were heroic, you know, that they fought valiantly and they did something good, and how Remember the Alamo became a revenge cry first. And the Alamo has always been this political myth held up to incite violence. It's LBJ used it in World War II, he used it in the first Indochina War, and then, of course, he famously used it over and over again in Vietnam when he directly compared Vietnam to the Alamo and as a reason why we should send more troops there.
I'm all
and
in favor.
At some point, we should get a hold of our myths because it keeps getting us into trouble.
Absolutely, and this is where I was going. I'm all in favor of things that are going to open our eyes, because I'll be honest, I learned about this much, about an inch, in a textbook about the Alamo growing up in Ohio.
In Texas public schools.
I didn't go to, in Ohio is a very, this is what it was, and next. So we got a very, whitewashed version of history. I hope folks will check it out. Forget the Alamo. We'll get links out on how folks can do that. But Jason, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great talking with you.
Rick, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Hope it's not 6 more years.
I hope so, too. Thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Make sure you check out get the book, Forget the Alamo. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Here at The Rick Smith Show, we don't accept corporate advertising. Never have, never will. In fact, we spend most of our time giving corporations the finger. We don't stop the show every few minutes to sell you supplements, beet juice, or whatever snake oil the right-wing loonies are pawning. That's because we're not sellouts. It's also because we're supported by our friends in labor and by people like you. If you like what we do, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. That's patreon.com/Rick Smith Show. Give what you can, if you can, and help us fight for the working class majority. Because together we bargain, divided we beg. Thank you for tuning in.